This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome everyone to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonzel, and I wouldn't want to belong to any group that would have me as a member. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Autel and Pico Technology. Tired of guesswork in your auto diagnostics? Need to pinpoint faults quickly and accurately? PicoScope will turn your PC into a powerful diagnostic tool. See live waveforms from sensors, injectors, and ignition systems. See the problem? Solve it faster. Visit PicoAuto.com. That's PicoAuto.com. Autel delivers award-winning automotive diagnostic tools trusted by technicians across North America. Backed by Autel North America experts in sales, training, and technical support. From drivability diagnostics and TPMS service to ADAS and advanced safety systems, Autel helps technicians follow OEM procedures and repair with confidence. Learn more at Autel.com. All right, a couple of episodes ago, I started talking about game theory. And I skipped an episode to talk about, you know, some life lessons from golf, or at least in the Bay, being more positive. And my wife and I did go golfing again, and turned out I wasn't so good at giving myself credit where credit was due anyway. So work in progress, right? To get back on the game theory, though, and I don't know if I'm just going to just hammer these out, but I think game theory is something we need to be talking about more and more and more. And then just economics. Economic theory really would be a big umbrella term, whereas game theory would be more specific to support and maybe create economic theory, but explain it, right? I think I've mentioned it before when I was talking about the word diagnostic or diagnosis, diagnostic specifically, and how it's misused, that I mentioned something called information asymmetry, and we need to keep rolling with that, because that is a major, major problem for us as an auto repair profession, industry, I mean, whatever you want to call us, trade, that from an economic standpoint, right, if we want to talk like we're economists, we're in a credence good service. That is something you've heard me say before, and I probably will keep saying it, because we'd never use terms like that. I've never heard anyone use that term. We should be. Our customers, for the most part, the vast, vast, vast majority of them, cannot tell the difference between a good repair and a not so good repair, or even a poor repair by our standards that makes the symptom go away, right? The easy examples, brakes. They come in grinding. They cannot tell the difference. There's no way for them to perceive a difference between a front rake job to cure the grinding by replacing pads and rotors for a bogus number of, we'll just say $500, versus the shop down the street that does it for $200, or the guy in the backyard who went and bought the cheapest parts, the cheapest pads, the cheapest rotors, maybe the shade tree picked up a brake lathe because they're so cheap, because we don't really do that much anymore with them, turned those rotors, resurfaced them, and went below spec, but he's trying to save them money. So now they don't know. All they know is the noise went away. The customer, all they know is that noise went away for $200. And shop A wanted $500 to do it. That's what they know. That's called information asymmetry. We know way more, and we should, about their vehicles than they do, than they can possibly be expected to know. But because of that, it inherently causes distrust. Now we have to talk about a gentleman by the name of George Akerlof. He won a Nobel Prize for basically a concept, or we'll call it a concept, theory concept, called the market for lemons. He was targeting the used car market, right? We call them lemons. If you bought a lemon, you could buy a lemon from a new car too, and this would apply, but generally is talking about used cars. It easily applies to auto repair directly. The idea is, because of the information asymmetry, because the car dealer or used car dealer knows more about that vehicle, and not so much even in this case, how the car works, just what's all wrong with it and what they did to make it sellable. There's a movie, Matilda, right? And Danny DeVito, one of my favorite actors, mainly for what he, I mean, he's done a lot of stuff, honestly. But when I was talking about him, it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I think that was cool what he did. And if you want to know more about that, go ahead and give that episode a listen. But he's a used car dealer, and you get to see what he's doing to these cars, like gluing bumpers on and stuff like that. Well, he's selling a lemon, and he knows it, and he's selling it for whatever price, for probably quite a bit less than the used car lot down the street, who's spends a lot of time buying quality vehicles, spending money on those vehicles to make sure they meet some minimum criteria, fully inspecting these vehicles, and for the most part, as best they can, selling quality vehicles. But they're selling them for a quality price. If the market has deception in it, where there are lemons for sale for $5,000 and quality vehicles that are largely the same make, model, you know, or whatever type of vehicle, but they're quality for $10,000, customers are not going to be willing to spend much more than a lemon for the quality vehicle because they can't trust that that's a quality vehicle. They can't do it. And so you create, or what is created, is this entire culture or environment of distrust, climate, really, climate of mistrust. We have that in our profession, in our shops, day in and day out, over and over and over. Customers come in, they already have a general idea that we're not on their side. That's sad because while we are and should be trying to run profitable businesses, we are on their side. I think the vast majority are on their side, on the customer side. They may unwittingly make mistakes that challenge that, not thinking things through, not, you know, optics, all the things. And that's not what this is about. But sometimes we don't do ourselves a whole heck of a lot of favors in changing that. But already there's a culture of mistrust. And then add a few more wrinkles to that. Who's bringing it in? I mean, if it's like our shop, and I think many shops, it's women bringing their cars in, or the family vehicle in. That's another layer of mistrust, because now they feel that they will be taken advantage of because they're women, because their own perception as well. They don't know as much about vehicles as men, so they're going to be preyed upon. They're going to be taken advantage of. What I've seen in other shops is not so much the shop is taking advantage of the women. They really aren't. Usually the opposite. I mean, not wholly like eating stuff simply because it's a woman, but they tread lightly, trying to be respectful, trying to earn trust. That's what they're trying so hard to do, desperately. But what they unwittingly do is, because either the woman herself, the client, believes she doesn't know about vehicles, or because who's ever talking to her feels like she doesn't know about vehicles, could be because she's a woman or because she just doesn't know about vehicles, withholds information or isn't quite as detailed in their explanations, or they don't slow down to explain things. They come off somewhat dismissive because you won't know what I'm talking about anyways. And that could be true, but that isn't the proper response, further creating this climate of distrust. They show up with a complaint in their car and they come back when we call them and say it's all ready to go. And they have a piece of paper and their keys, and they give us money and they drive away. Some of us might feel that there's nothing wrong with that. And I suppose fundamentally there isn't, especially if we're on the level and we've built up a rapport over time. But generally that doesn't happen, especially if you haven't been around for a long time and developed this reputation. I mean, that's what it is.
Is your shop ready for the electric vehicle revolution? Don't get left behind. The Picoscope EV Kit is your all-in-one solution. Diagnose any electric or hybrid vehicle, from high-voltage batteries to complex communication systems. With guided tests and pinpoint accuracy, you'll tackle more jobs and boost your bottom line. This isn't just a tool. It's your future. Be the expert in EV repair. Visit PicoAuto.com to future-proof your shop today. That's PicoAuto.com. This episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z is brought to you by Autel. Autel is a global developer and manufacturer of award-winning professional automotive diagnostic tools and service equipment, trusted by technicians, educators, and shop owners across North America. With diagnostics at their core, Autel's real-world solutions support repair workflows ranging from full-system vehicle diagnostics to servicing the most advanced automotive technologies. What sets Autel North America apart is the team behind the tools. Dedicated experts across sales, training, and technical support, each bringing deep, hands-on experience supporting professional technicians. When questions arise, you're working with people who understand the vehicles, the procedures, and the real-world demands of modern repair. Whether diagnosing complex drivability concerns, servicing TPMS systems, validating repairs, or working with ADOS and advanced safety technologies, Autel tools are engineered to support accurate, efficient repairs in strict accordance with OEM procedures and standards. To learn more about Autel and their diagnostic solutions, visit autel.com, AUTEL.com. So now we have to be thinking how to combat that. That really is the solution, is information, trying to level that playing field, I'm not saying you educate the client to become a mechanical or technical specialist. I'm just saying that we try to narrow the gap a little bit. Even a little bit means a lot. And that means overwhelming data. And again, I'm not necessarily saying, you know, for those of you that know what a telephone book is, I'm not saying a big, thick stack of papers. But are they being texted their digital vehicle inspections? Are they being walked through the inspections and shown what's good? Are they being brought back to the vehicle and shown what's good, what's bad? And then given details about the repair before and after. Like, that's hard to do sometimes to remember. And I don't know, maybe there's a lot of digital vehicle inspection software out there not set up so much for that, where you do the inspection to find all of what's wrong. But then during the repairs, is there a stage where there's kind of a before, during, and after? We're going to demonstrate this ball joint's loose. Here's the video of it. We marked it red because it's really loose and it's causing tire damage and all the things. So whatever, however much money, we're going to replace the tires and the ball joint, do a wheel alignment, and depending on the car, maybe an ADOS calibration. Boom. It's a lot of money. Which is, I mean, kind of a bogus term. What does that even mean? But we'll just say, whatever. It's not nothing, right? They're spending money. They might be getting exactly what they pay for and extraordinary value for their dollar, but they still have to pay the money that they don't want to spend. Are we showing them kind of that process of the repair? They've seen the loose ball joint. We've shown them the other side that the ball joint isn't loose. It's good. But do we show them, here's the before, and now here's a couple of photos or a quick video of when the vehicle's apart. Like, this is what we all had to do to replace that ball joint. Now the new ball joint's in. And, oh, you know, here it is. I'm showing you the difference. I don't know how many people do that. And it is. It's more time. And we have to adjust the rates accordingly. We just do. But we're building trust. We're building value. We're showing them what we're doing, why we're doing it, and giving them less reason to distrust. Even though it may be slight, we're insulating ourselves from a market for lemons. That's what we're doing. We're insulating ourselves from that, where it becomes less of a thing. There's still going to be a market for it because we have just complex machines that break, and they don't know, nor should they. They don't know about it. They don't know what it takes. They don't know how it all works. And it's fine. They don't have to, but it affects their perception of what we're doing. And we have to take measures to respond, to reassure and further insulate ourselves. There's another kind of a wrench in this. And it's not just our profession by any means. We have the internet. We have resources like YouTube. People can go look into things. There's forums. There's large language models that
can get involved and provide. I mean, it can be actually quite awful information depending on how you ask it and what the algorithm is, right? Because I don't know if you've been using many large language models. When I say large language models, I'm talking about Gemini, ChatGPT, Claude, DeepSeek. There's so many, Grok. A lot of the baseline algorithms are to be very validating. Like, that's a basic setting that we have to go in and change. It's an algorithm that they are to be very validating, make you feel good about yourself. Because let's be honest, they want you to keep using these resources. That's how they get money, right? Your attention is worth money. Engagement. They want your engagement. Engagement is money. You're using these large language models, or they, them, whoever, using the large language models. That's how they earn their money. Depending on the algorithms, depending on how they ask the questions, depending on what they ask of the large language model, could point them in a bad direction, further demonizing us. So we have to fight some misinformation, some disinformation, and then also good information that's not understood. Because again, back to the broken record, information asymmetry. They don't know. They don't have the background. So watching these videos, their bias is they're getting taken advantage of. And because that video or that forum or that response from whatever large language model fits their worldview or supports their fear, it's easy to believe that over us. And that's another hurdle we have to try to keep almost overcompensating for until you can develop such a reputation that your shop or you as a technical specialist, you as a mechanical specialist develop such a reputation that you become somewhat immune to it. But that's it in the nutshell, is that we have to be very, very aware. We have to be thinking about this stuff. Information asymmetry is very much part of game theory. We don't hear much about game theory. We don't hear much about economics, not like pure economics. Economics like they would talk about in other professions. These are concepts, these are terms, these are theories, these are laws that we need to be thinking about, that we need to be talking about. These are terms we need to be using. Yeah, I hope this sparks interest either in economics, economic theory, game theory, or just the idea of it, thinking about it in those terms, thinking about information asymmetry, thinking about being a credence good service, what that means, what we have to do to succeed in that environment. What do we do when we have competition who basically help create the culture of distrust? How do we combat that? How do we become protected and somewhat immune to that? We need to be thinking about that. We need to be talking about that. And a lot of the answers are nothing new. They've been around for decades and decades and decades. We just need to look for them. The problem is we don't use, I hate to say generic, but they're not so much generic terms. They're just terms. It would be basically like trying to talk about physics without using physics terms, right? If you're not going to talk about spin, how do we talk about particle physics? You can't. So the same thing. If we're going to look up for solutions for economic type problems, business type problems, and we're not using economic terms or game theory terms, how do we get to the answer? Because they've been out there. They've been out there for a long time. We have to think about how we present information. Even if they by themselves can't interpret it, we can help them a little bit. A lot of times it's just before and after, good and bad. And Sesame Street, one of these things doesn't look like the other. This is what it looked like before. This is what it looks like after. This is your charging system voltage before the alternator, and it was 11.7 volts. And here is your voltage after we put a battery and alternator in it, and it's 14.2 volts with all the accessories on. Do they know that fundamentally that is good? Nope. They know that if we tell them, we can maybe show them information that good is anything from 13.7 to, you know, 14.6 volts. Okay. That helps. And I suppose before I wind this down, that is yet another means of demonstrating value, demonstrating trust service information, reference service information, reference manufacturer service information, show them if need be, or it's so easy to attach stuff nowadays, right? You're not giving them a stack of paper anymore. It's an email. It's a text message. It's a link to, you know, whatever, an FTP or a server or something on the cloud. Why not? This is what we did. This is why we did it. Why did we do all this work? Why did we have to take all this stuff apart to do this? It says it right here in service information. The people that built the car said, this is the way to do it. This is the way we did it. Just another way to build. Am I saying that's always the right way to do it? Is there not quality, professional, quote unquote, shortcuts, which is shortcut by itself is probably a horrific term, but is there a way to do the same job as well or better than the way the manufacturer said to do it? I think in some cases there are. Does all this stuff have to come apart to replace this part? Maybe not, right? But in general, I think referencing service information is yet another way to keep building, demonstrating quality, demonstrating trust. And that's how we insulate ourselves from a market for lemons. I hope you got a kick out of this. I hope you see where I'm going with this. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out or put a comment in the technical term, doobly-doo. If you're watching this on YouTube, otherwise shoot me a message on Facebook Messenger. Otherwise, email me at mattfonzelpodcast@gmail.com. And before I sign off here, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Autel and Pico Technology. And I'd also like to thank the Auto Repair Podcast Network for making this all possible. And yeah, until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.